So we welcome Jane and Natasha to introduce the next topic, which is an emission trading schemes research project. And Natasha,
Good morning, everyone. I'm Natasha, and this is Jane. I'm interviewing Jane from Rate Regulated Activities. And we just wanted to talk to you a little bit today about emissions trading schemes, which right now is in a research phase. So in this session, we're going to provide a little bit of background information on the most common scheme, which is the cap and trade scheme, and some of the main accounting issues that have been identified so far. And some of that information is in 4B and the paper that we provided as well. So we're not really going to go through that paper in detail, but some of the topics are referenced in the slides. And I guess what we were wondering if we could get from you is just information on some of the schemes that are operating in your jurisdictions and some of the accounting issues that you may have, that you may know about in relation to these schemes. So as I mentioned, we are still in very much of a research phase. We have been looking into what schemes are in place right now and how those schemes are being accounted for. And there was a previous project for emissions that started after an interpretation was issued and then withdrawn around 2004. But in that project, even though some of the ISB did make some decisions, the project was suspended because of time and resource constraints. So we are going to be revisiting a lot of those issues, and this is kind of being treated as a new project. So if we look at slide 7, you can just see from there that you might know that the Kyoto Protocol in around 1997 got some countries to commit to reducing emissions, but they didn't necessarily say how that was going to be done. So a lot of different countries have chosen different ways to implement this reduction in emissions, which has meant that even though they're kind of going for the same objective, there are different mechanisms that they're using to do this, and so then there's a lot of times different accounting for the way that people are employing those mechanisms. On slide 8, we have an overview of the two main types of schemes that we've seen. The one that's more prevalent is the cap and trade scheme, which is what's being used in the EU. So in this scheme, there's an overall cap that is usually for a jurisdiction that is in some type of unit of emissions. The most common one is carbon dioxide. And that cap, parts of it are assigned to different installations of an entity. And they can emit up to that cap without incurring any penalties or having to pay any extra. But if they want to emit more than that, then they are going to have to pay for it, either by buying more allowances or sometimes by buying more allowances to cover that, as well as some sort of penalty fee that they have to pay. So the way that they get those allowances is that either the government will allocate the allowances to them free of charge, or they can purchase the allowances in a market that is part of why it's called a cap and trade scheme. So the level of emission, the amount of allowances that they're given is usually at a level that's below their historical emissions, which of course makes them have to reduce their emissions so that they don't have to pay the, or they don't have to acquire extra allowances to cover those emissions. So the kind of main difference between that and the baseline and credit. There are a lot of similarities between these two schemes, except for with the baseline, the cap is just established, and if you go under that cap, then you can get credits, which are kind of equivalent to the allowances, and those are tradable, but for a much shorter period of time. But the baseline that the installation of the entity is assigned can't be traded, technically. So the way that the baseline is accounted for is a question that Are there any questions so far? The paper does have a little more detail, but if there are any questions, please. Is there anyone here who is subject to a cap and trade scheme? Yes. Okay. And what about baseline and credit? No? Okay, so if we go to slide 10, we're going to hit what the main accounting issues are for this project. So in these schemes, the very high overview that I've just given and I'm sure some of you know about, is what elements an entity should recognize in these schemes. Do the allowances meet the definition of an asset? And are there, where or when do the obligations and therefore liabilities arise? And then of course, if there are recognizable assets or liabilities, when do you recognize them and how, when do you measure them up? So on the next slide, we have the current conceptual framework definition of an asset and underneath a more updated version from the discussions that the board has had. But we don't think that that's going to affect much in terms of whether or not the allowance would meet that definition, the allowance or the credit in a baseline and credit scheme. So we have an example on the next slide, and I'll just give you a couple of minutes to read through it, and then maybe we can take a vote for who thinks there is or is not.
Perhaps people, I don't know if you've seen this morning, many people have already credit, so I don't know if we need a few minutes. It strikes me one of your issues here is a transitional issue. I mean, if you focus on the net liability at the end of the year rather than the beginning of the year, I mean, it strikes me in many cases you'll actually have a net liability by the end of the year. And so I know it doesn't fit in very well with your definition or your requirement to assess assets and liabilities separately, but it strikes me by this focus on the on focusing on the asset and liability separately, it gives you this issue with whether how to fit it in the conceptual framework. But my suggestion also gets you that challenge. But I think you're in, if you focused on balance, first of all, at the end of the period, what's your expected balances at the end of the period on a net basis? It might end up being easier than if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, it certainly, maybe one of the questions is what is the units of account if we did it in technical speak? So are we going to try and account for the scheme in its entirety and look at the net position of a company within the scheme? Or do we deal with the separate components of the scheme?
Well, that's a good term that I had forgot about the unit of account definition. So yeah, for me the definition is the unit of account at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, we've lived with this for already a number of years. You know, for us, is an allocation an asset? Yes, it is an asset. You will get an asset for zero value for the allowances we are granted by the government. And if we do not have enough allowances, then we need to buy them, and then we book them for the price we pay. Do we have a liability? We may have a liability in case we produce more CO2 than we are entitled to. When do we measure the liability? We measure it over time. It's not only the balance sheet closing issue, you need also to define during the year when you consider that you may not have enough allowances to cover for your emissions. So either, and then you have a liability until you have bought those allowances. So for us it's a rather straightforward mechanism. And the liability, as long as we have not purchased the credits which are the allowances which are needed, basically we mark it to market.
So the the assets you mark to market on?
No, we do not, because the assets because then after that you may have an issue with business model.
Okay.
In our case, we buy credit because we are in the production model. Basically, just cover for our emissions, and basically we've got a policy not to trade them, because basically we'll keep them to be remitted, you know, the following year. So that's also a key element is what is your business model, how do you manage the allowances? Because some, you know, actually make a trade of the allowances, but as an industrial company, we are only strictly in the production model.
That's very similar to what we do. We look at the shortfall on an annual basis and recognize the shortfall over at least on an annual basis. We think it's a better presentation that the users are going to be able to understand that, you know, our costs are going to be more ratable during the year, and you're not going to go along with no costs for a period of time and all of a sudden in the last quarter of the year have an escalation in costs that they may not have anticipated because you've got a shortfall in your credits. Other than that, I think we're very aligned with how you described your approach as well.
This is just an observation. In going through your fact patterns and some of your suggestions, you keep smacking up against the levies, IFRIC. And I was struggling to get to these facts and circumstances and then going, but hang on, the levies IFRIC has got exactly the similar facts and circumstances with the exact opposite answer. Because if this is only a levy settleable in 3 years' time when you've had the measurement, well then we theoretically have got the answer. Wrong as a lot of us believe. And I can't follow the rationale given previous decisions in the model we've got in these facts and slides.
I think in terms we're coming up against the distinction between trying to look at this as the entire scheme and coming up with some accounting that seems to fit what people see as the economics of the scheme. And a couple of important points came out. One is that, you know, obviously on day one, you're given these instruments, these allowances that are tradable. You can sell them, you can make profit by selling them. But is that a genuine profit? Because if you are a participant in a scheme that is producing emissions, you're going to have to get them back so that you can remit them as your obligation to the scheme. And you're quite right about the IFRIC that deals with the levies. That IFRIC, which is number 21, just deals with the liability side of the equation. It doesn't deal with the debit side of it. And this is what we knock up against in emissions trading schemes, is that we've got something that on day one seems to be an asset, and it's something that's a resource that we can trade, we can make money from, etc. But then the question is, you know, is it a genuine gain? Is it a genuine resource available to us? Because all it's doing is allowing us to continue operating in a way that we previously did without any additional charge. And what we've then got is most people are in a net, by the end of the year, most people are in a net liability position because, as Natasha says, the amount of emissions that you're allocated through these schemes that you're given free of charge by the government is usually lower than the historical level of emissions. So,
but you make efficiencies also, you know, it's you know, the objective also is you to operate more efficiently. So even if you get more allowances, basically you may end up in an asset position because you've operated your plants much more efficiently than reduction of allowances.
Yeah, sorry, I meant like at the kind of beginning of a phase, then it would be harder to maybe meet the lower number of allowances you're given. But yeah, over time, then you would have the efficiencies.
Cool.
probably roughly the same. We have we make a forecast of how much we will produce ourselves, and then we net it against what we have. There is one complication in a way, because the allocation is normally for a 5-year period, but we receive it yearly in a way, and we just recognize the yearly thing as an asset and then net. And we think netting is okay as it's the same counterparty. And then if we have been successfully lowering it, so we have an asset in a way then, but that we value, and if we don't have enough, we will have a liability, but we have an asset, and that's valued through the income statement.
So can I just clarify, you recognize an asset on day one for the allowances that you receive?
No, we,
at the beginning of the year?
We get 100 the first day of the year, mm-hmm. Then we know the production during this year will give us 98. We
right.
value 2.
So again, it's just the net position,
the net position.
You just happen to be in the net asset
but
expectation.
Fair value it?
Then we fair value it.
We do not fair value it, we keep the value at 0. If we get it for 0, we keep it at 0, and we carry forward for the following 3 years.
But how come 3 years?
Because we've got we can carry forward, you know, if we have not used all the credits at the end of one year, we can carry them forward for another 2 years.
Okay. I mean, I have to admit, I'm not an expert in this area, but it strikes me there's another thing you need to think about is this guidance for producers of CO2, I mean, perhaps you need to get a different guidance, or you're going to have to think about the guidance for those entities that actually produce the emissions and those that actually provide the offset. So, I don't know if you're a forestry company or something like this, presumably you're a good guy, and you're producing a lot of credits that can be sold, either within the country or, I noticed you mentioned somewhere, typically these schemes are within one jurisdiction, but I guess longer term you could think of some worldwide market. So, you know, we're actually actively planting trees in China and Colombia and Mali and other places to at least internally say we are offsetting our emissions by these good projects. But of course I guess we're not, the world's not that sophisticated in actually being able to trade good things you're doing in
interestingly. Bob, go ahead.
I think the name you put on this is not correct, because you say emission trading scheme. To us it's not trading.
Yeah.
It's accounting of emissions, and I think that should be the wording. Otherwise, yeah, if you are bankers, that's trading, but then it's another type of accounting.
Yeah, he's interesting. One of the reasons that we're coming to this stage in the project, I mean, we haven't yet been to the board with a project plan for this, because we're trying to gather information. We're just starting this project afresh. And Natasha and I have been thinking about, can we change the name of the project? Historically, it's always been called Emission Trading Schemes. And most of the schemes that you see around the world are called Emission Trading Schemes. That's the title for it. But increasingly, there is an interconnection between different types of schemes. And in lots of countries, there's more than one scheme. So it's not just a cap and trade scheme. And so we were thinking of perhaps changing the title to something like emission reduction schemes, because there's lots of ways of achieving that. And in trying to develop a project proposal for the board, one of the questions we were thinking of asking is, should we just be looking at the accounting for the emitters, those people that are having to acquire these allowances and emit them for the volume of emissions? Or do we look more widely and pull in other types of schemes? Because as you quite rightly say, there are some schemes where the project is designed to absorb emissions. So forestry is one of the main ones in Brazil, in China, in New Zealand. There are schemes to encourage people to plant trees which will absorb emissions, and those people can then issue these allowances, which in some cases would only be able to be used in the same country, but some of them are actually internationally tradable. So a question is, do we try and capture both emitters and absorbers, whatever title we give them, and you know, try and look at it more holistically. That there is one other body that we need to be conscious of, which is the government that actually issue these allowances. So we are aware, we're in touch with the IPSASB, the Public Sector Accounting Standards Board, who have got this on their radar as well. So we'll try and pick up the government side of this through the Public Sector Accounting Standards Board. But am I right in thinking that? I can see lots of nods around the room thinking we perhaps should have this project wider, looking at the companies involved in both emitting and absorbing.
If I may, I think you should at least, perhaps, I mean, I like the point that it shouldn't be trading, you should change the title, but I think you should at least acknowledge that even if you phase the project in two, but that at some stage of the project you do need to account for the good guys, not the bad guys.
You ready? People pointed out that you need to consider the business model. Most manufacturing companies use a production model. Some trading houses and financial institutions might use a financial instrument model. And in addition, you need to consider that there are many types of emission trading scheme. In case of Japan, it's in an early stage and trade is not so active. However, the SBJ have already developed an interpretation guideline, which is very conservative. You can contact the SBJ, but our model is similar to the approach 3 on page 18. But however, we do not recognize initial allocation our assets because it is free of charge. So we recognize the profit at the later stage when it becomes certain. So we adopt a very conservative approach.
Just one more issue. Don't look too close to the old from 2004, because if I remember right, that created volatility.
Yeah, I think on slide 16 we've got a summary of IFRIC 3, which was a very short-lived interpretation that was issued in 2004 and withdrawn in 2005 before the effective date actually kicked in. And there were lots of issues with that, which I think touches on the very first point that was raised this morning, which is it really took each little element of the scheme and looked at each element completely separately. So it ended up with recognising the allowances on day one as an intangible asset, but recognising it at fair value. And then to avoid recognising a day one gain, say, well, that's kind of a government grant that's got some conditions attached, so we recognise a government grant. And then the liability for remitting allowances, well, that attaches only to your physical activity of emitting pollutants, so you would then only recognise that gradually over the year. But the measurement that was recommended by IFRIC 3 was different because the liability would be remeasured at each reporting date based on, I think you said, the market value, or maybe Jacques said, is the market value of any additional allowances you were going to need to buy.
But IFRIC 3 was the allowances that you'd got sitting in your inventory of allowances would be at the original fair value and wouldn't be revalued, or if they were, it would be in the intangible asset model, and therefore you would be putting any revaluation gains or losses through other comprehensive income as opposed to P&L. So we are conscious of IFRIC 3, but again, for this project, we are thinking of proposing to the board, and it sounds like we will have your support for this, taking a fresh start to the project and being a bit more holistic. I'm interested, several people now have mentioned the business model, and it is something that we're aware of in the three different models that are, or three different approaches that are mentioned on slides 18 and 19. It doesn't actually talk about business model, but we have seen some examples where preparers of financial statements who are emitters kind of try and do their estimates at the beginning of the year as to how many allowances they will need for their production, and they treat those in a different way than any expected surplus allowances that they might have. So Bo, you said you're in a net asset position, so you've got spare allowances. Do you treat those effectively as financial instruments? So you treat them as?
No, if we've got excess allowances, anyhow, ourselves, we do not value them.
Right.
Unless we sell them, because we are for sure that we will not have to use them within the 3 year period. But there's no value until actually we sell them to the market, in case we do it. But if not, if we have excess allowances, the value is zero, because we got it from the government from zero,
yeah.
And we've planned, and so that we have not bought any in excess, because we know that we will not need more than what we got. So the value is zero. Now we need to be very careful, because that's, you know, there has been a big work which has been done in France 2 or 3 years ago on the matter. And there has been a lot of discussions whether it was a financial instrument or whether was it more an asset, used in the production. And I think, and that's why for me the business model is very important. For an industry, it's not a financial instrument, it's just the cost of that we need to incur, or an allowance we get just to produce. It's in no way considered as a financial instrument. For a bank or for an institution which trade those buy and sell them, then you can have a different business model, and then maybe you could consider that as a financial instrument. But do not forget about, again, the business model. What do we do? What is the purpose of those allowances? And what do we do with them?
For us, it's in principle the same, but we value them at market. But we have them as inventory.
You have forests too, is that right? And, your company produces paper, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
So you have your own forests too?
No, we don't have any forests.
You don't have any forests?
So we don't produce that way. But we, it's mainly on the energy production you produce these kind of emissions.
The way you explained it earlier, held for use is at zero value, and held for trading is at fair value.
Yeah, in principle you can say that. But you never know in the end if the production change in a way, so yearly that we may sell when the year is over, or we save it to next year.
So when you're fair valuing, do you put the change in fair value through P&L or through?
Yes.
Through P&L, so it is treated effectively as a financial instrument, not as a
intangible
asset.
Like a normal product.
Commodities.
Commodity product. I mean, like raw material.
Any other comments to that, or do we have questions to change? Additional questions?
I think we kind of haven't got very far through the slides, because I think most people have been covering the later slides. So I think we probably, unless Natasha's got any other questions, I think we've got some very helpful input. So happy to give you a finish for lunch, unless anybody has any other comments.
Seems not the case. Then I would say we should have some lunch break, 1 hour, so we will come back at